Like many people, I suffer from anxiety and mild depression. Occasionally, these conditions deepen. This has been happening to me off and on in recent months. This is nothing new. While researching this address, I came across a similar address I gave in this church 26 years ago. Then I talked about a helpful book called Care of the Soul by an American psychologist called Thomas More. This time I'm going to reference this book, Life with Full Attention, by a London-based Buddhist teacher and poet called Maitreya Bandhu. I have read this book 5 times over the past 10 years, so it must be having some influence over me. Again, like many people, I have a problem with a lack of self-esteem. I compare myself with others. I put myself down. I become a bit overwhelmed sometimes with negative thoughts. I call this my down the plug hole mood. Just about everything can be dragged into it. Negative states of mind are like lobster pots. They are easy to get into, but difficult to get out of. Another way of putting this is to use the Buddhist concept of the second dart or the second arrow. We can hypnotize ourselves into painful states of mind. When we say to ourselves, I'm feeling overwhelmed, or I'm about to relapse into depression, we shoot ourselves with the second arrow. We shoot ourselves with a big dose of fear and dread. We get locked into a negative feedback loop between painful feelings and painful thoughts. One way I try to combat my anxiety is through Buddhist meditation, which I try to do every morning and twice a week with a group in the Dublin Buddhist Center. Buddhist meditation emphasizes that the anxious thoughts we experience are just that. They're thoughts, passing thoughts, not facts. Indeed, the facts will show that I have little reason to be depressed. I have had a rather interesting and productive life. I have lived in 5 countries in several continents, although I have always loved Ireland above any other place on earth. I have been reasonably successful in my chosen career of journalism. I have co-written and edited 3 books. I have worked for peace and cooperation in Northern Ireland. Above all, I have been hugely blessed by the love of 3 marvelous women, my wife Dhirin and my daughters Soraka and Grania. So I follow Buddhist and Christian teaching to make time for the people and things I love. I try to be a good, caring husband and father. I try to cultivate warm friendships. I try to walk in the hills and mountains where I am particularly relaxed and happy. I go cycling around Ireland for the same reasons. I take daily physical exercise and take pleasure in the beauties of nature. I try as much as I can to help those of my fellow humans who are less privileged and more unfortunate than me. And usually my times of enjoying and cherishing someone or something and helping other people gradually change how I feel about myself. But I also find regular Buddhist meditation helpful in that it calms my mind more generally. We 21st century humans suffer from a dragon's head, a mind that races with thoughts and ideas, arguments and opinions, emails and WhatsApps and to-do lists. We have a snake's body, long and thin and underdeveloped. The Buddha, who lived 2,500 years ago, would experience us as being one-sidedly cerebral, with a marked tendency to rationalize, ruminate, and abstract. That is certainly the way I am. So I like to cultivate, through my morning meditation, the first of the Buddha's spheres of mindfulness of the body. Buddhists believe body awareness roots us in direct physical sensations, and as such, is a vital contribution to avoid being caught up in painful thoughts. I bring my mind into my body by doing a toe to top of the head body scan. I focus on the lower and middle parts of my body and on my breath as I concentrate on those parts. I feel in particular my feet, stomach, and heart, and the weight of my body on the floor. I focus on my breath passing through my body. This is usually a good antidote for anxiety and tension. I also try to cultivate the second and third of the Buddha's spheres of mindfulness: mindfulness of feeling, what Buddhists call vedana, and mindfulness of mind and heart. I try to focus on beautiful and restful and natural images: my daughter's and granddaughter's faces, the Wicklow Hills, the Atlantic Ocean off the Kerry and West Cork coasts. I think of ordinary things: a jar of honey, reading a book, walking along a bog road. Thinking about nature is particularly important here. These ordinary things are made significant by a mind that is calm, alert, inquisitive, and unpreoccupied. The kind of consciousness I hope that meditation and mindfulness are helping me to cultivate, not always successfully, I should add. I try to cultivate appreciation of beauty and nature and art and music and sport. Maitreya Bayandu writes, "The spiritual value of the appreciative mode is in its non-utilitarian, non-acquisitive nature. Appreciation is an end in itself. It is its own reward. And as we develop this appreciative mode, we start to become sensitized to how so much of modern life is ugly. We notice how banal the media are, can be, how unpalatable harsh speech, cynical ideas, and snide remarks are. We start to notice that egoism, in all of its myriad guises, is not very productive. We see how uncreative it is, how coarse and predictable. True appreciation is a letting go of self, a letting go of egoism. When we are absorbed in the appreciative awareness of a wide blue sky or a tree or a poem or a songbird, we forget ourselves, and by doing so, we transcend ourselves. The arts can play an important role here. The pleasure one gets from art is not based on egotistic desire. We can read a poem, listen to a piece of music, as we've just done, or look at a painting and feel uplifted. We can come away from watching King Lear or The Cherry Orchard and feel we have gained a deeper understanding of what it means to be human. This is what Seamus Heaney calls the redress of poetry, that the arts can give us back our life, purified and absolved by the imaginative vision of the artist. The Buddha communicated the essence of spiritual life, the culminating insight of life with full attention, in the words, "In the seen, only the seen. In the heard, only the heard." This is experience with nothing left over, with nothing of me added on, writes Maitreya Bayandu. It is pure, selfless appreciation. When we see things this way, without describing, grasping, or referring everything back to me, 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 we see with what Buddhists call vidya. When we see with vidya, the world begins to shine. We look at a building, a mop bucket, or a bramble hedge, and there seems to be something more. It seems alive in a way we can't pin down. The life in the world out there seems connected to the life in here. Both seem more vivid and at the same time more mysterious. The chasm between the world and the self has begun to disappear. Buddhism teaches that freedom is essentially freedom from self. One could say that letting go of the prison of self is the goal of Buddhism. I find that a very attractive idea. I do Buddhist meditation to free myself from the negativity of my racing mind and its sometimes toxic thoughts, to find some calm and serenity in this speedy and self-obsessed and often frightening world. However, there is far more to Buddhism than this psychological sanctuary. Maitra Bayandu writes, "In the early stages of spiritual life, we are likely to be motivated by the need for personal happiness and freedom from pain. We will see mindfulness as a way of becoming happier in our skin and more at home in the world. Practicing mindfulness will help us to achieve this so long as we learn carefully and practice regularly. But our motivations can change. We might discover that our quest for personal happiness has become limiting and after a certain point, self-defeating. We might start to feel motivated more by the sufferings of other people rather than by our own. We might even start to realize that the only way to true happiness is to transcend self altogether. This is the transcendental orientation of Buddhism. A Buddhist approach to mindfulness takes into account a psychological orientation, but will always guide us towards a transcendental one. Buddhism is emphatic in saying that it is only by liberating ourselves from our belief in a separate self, separate from others and from the world, that we will finally be happy. I am not ready for this move beyond the psychological and towards the transcendental. I accept the central Buddhist teaching that all things are impermanent and that this precious life has to be lived now, the world has to be fully appreciated now, that life must be lived with as full an attention as possible now because it will not last. However, I find it hard to get my head around the other central Buddhist concept that a fixed and really existing self is a delusion, which will disappear when all attachments are gotten rid of, including attachments to dearly loved ones, and enlightenment is achieved. Maybe I never will be a complete convert. Maybe Buddhist teaching about spiritual death and spiritual rebirth all sounds too much like being born again, which my early upbringing in evangelical Protestant Northern Ireland turned me against. However, there are other important things even an agnostic like me can learn from Buddhism. For example, generosity is something I try to cultivate. The Buddha says that if you are generous, the whole of the spiritual life is open to you. You can have many faults and shortcomings, but if you are generous, many things are possible. I find generosity is a practical way of improving my self-esteem. When I feel bad about myself, I become self-absorbed. Self-absorption is one of the major symptoms of depression. A simple antidote to this painful self-preoccupation is generosity. Generosity is something one can practice in any state of mind. You don't have to be in a good mood. I believe that if I give to other people, even in small ways, I often find a sense of inner fullness and calm. Generosity creates positive relationships with others, which is vital to our happiness. Maitreya Bandhu writes, "Your relationship with other people is the key to happiness. If you can listen to people, give to them, be kind to them, you will yourself become happier. You will be freed from corrosive self-absorption and you will avoid the danger of spiritualized selfishness. All genuine spiritual practice is concerned with helping others. When we forgive people, when we put ourselves out for them, when we overcome our irritations and resentments concerning them, we transcend ourselves. Self-transcendence is the goal of Buddhism." One mantra I use in my meditation practice sums up my attitude to life and action, and I suppose makes me a bit of a Buddhist. It goes like this: "With deeds of loving kindness, I purify my body. With open-handed generosity, I purify my body. With stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I purify my body. With truthful communication, I purify my speech. With mindfulness, clear and radiant, I purify my mind. With gratitude, I purify my heart. Amen.